I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. We've been devoting some airtime this summer to the problem of guns and violence in Philadelphia. It's a serious and complicated issue in parts of this city that has touched and transformed the lives of many young people, including our guests. Jamira Burley was just appointed executive director of the Philadelphia Youth Commission by Mayor Michael Nutter. She's a recent graduate of Temple University, the first in her family to graduate from college. When her brother was murdered in 2005, she founded the Overbrook High Panther Peace Corps and became a school leader working to develop alternatives to violence. And she joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. And Jamira Burley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Also with us is Kiana Burns, and her father was murdered last summer in the Strawberry Mansion section of the city. Kiana was wounded in the same shootout. She participates in the Healing Hurt Program, which is affiliated with the Drexel University School of Public Health. She attends One Bright Ray, and that's an alternative school here in Philadelphia. And Kiana, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you both here. And your perspectives are so important. It's part of a series of conversations we've been having, and we wanted to make sure that we heard from young people. Let me start with you, if I could, Jamira. What does the executive director of the City of Philadelphia Youth Commission do all day?
Well, for those who do not know, the Philadelphia Youth Commission is basically the youth version of City Council, I like to think of. They're comprised of 21 young people between the ages of 12 and 23 that advise the mayor and city council and other entities who make decisions about young people on what young people think, how they feel, and what do they think they need to be implemented in their particular community to make them successful.
And what's number one on that list?
Number one on that list is violence. Of course, young people are being exterminated across the city and across the nation. Many of them are losing their lives quite early, way early, before they're even 18 years old to vote. So I think it's really important for the Youth Commission and other organizations to kind of identify ways that we can prevent those things from happening instead of just being reactive.
You use the word exterminate. That's a powerful
yes.
word. You mean that?
I do mean that. If you turn on the television and the first thing you hear about is a young person being murdered in their neighborhood, and every day in America, you have 15 to 16 young people who die because of violence. And then you have 25 people who die because of gun violence. So it's clearly a prevalent issue. And we lose more young people to violence every day than we lose soldiers during wartime. So that's something really important to recognize.
And you've lived in a number of different neighborhoods all
yes.
over the city. And would it be fair to say that some neighborhoods are more dangerous than others?
Some neighborhoods are definitely more dangerous to others. I don't think that they're war zones. Like many people who come to Philadelphia think that as soon as they walk on Philadelphia soil that they're going to be shot. But I do think there's a lot of violence, inner city violence between neighborhoods where you have blocks against blocks, and young people who are committing violent crimes and not recognizing the extent of what that means to murder another person.
Kiana, let me get you in on the conversation. What part of the city do you live in now?
I actually live on Allegheny, mm-hmm. Dean Allegheny. River Street.
What's your neighborhood like?
Okay. It's good and it's not, because I stay in the house. Like, I watch people get beat on every day. Like, you come to the door, I can't say, like, my first time living there, like, 2 weeks living there. Me and my mom, we was actually going out to the store, and we see this man in front of our door just leaking, blood gushing in front of him. So, me and my mom had told me to go in the house and get, like, a towel or something. So, I went out there, I got him a towel, wrapped around his head, and my mom had asked him what happened. And she had asked my neighbors, because my neighbors had actually beat on him. So they was like, he stole my bike and all that stuff. I'm like, okay, he stole your bike, but my thing is, how come you couldn't talk to him before you chose to put your hands on him? Like, that could be your brother, someone out there. Like, I grew up and my dad wasn't in my life. Like, my dad, he's on drugs. So, like, when I see people out there, like, and they can't control it, like, they just addicted to it. They addicted to drugs. So when I see people shooting up heroin or, you know, cocaine, whatever they do, and my friends, they would make fun of them, and I would get upset inside, because I'm like, that could be my father, you guys laughing at. So, like, I got so many people in my family that was on drugs, who's going through things, and I just look at the other people, like, as if they're my family. So, basically, my neighborhood is just, like, it's kind of bad. Like, it's bad. Like, every other neighborhood is bad. I just want to move out of Philly. So.
Well, I hear you. And you're describing, obviously, a very serious and potentially dangerous situation. But you also say there's some good parts?
Yeah, some good parts.
What are the good parts?
Actually, my block is good because all our neighbors, they stick together. They like strong if anything goes on. Like I know if anything goes on with me, my mom would definitely know. But like once I said again, like once again, I stay in the house. I stay to myself because after everything happened with my dad and my little brother, that just impacted me. Like I'm like, oh wow, it's getting kind of crazy out here. Like and like she said, I want to add on to that. Like, so when you turn on the TV, like, you would hear, like, more young people getting shot and killed than, like, soldiers or people who, like, who's wanting to protect and make the world a better place. Like, recently, like, one of my brother friends got murdered. He got shot up from a cop just because he was out there. He was black. They shot him up for nothing. He died. And it's like, it's crazy. It's all is crazy.
Well, what you're describing, and I have to say, as a you know someone who's probably either your parents or even maybe even your grandparents' age, is that you have seen too much. You're both very young. You're a high school student. You're a recent graduate of Temple University, and just hearing you both of you describing, and frankly, Jamira, reading a little bit about your life and how you grew up and what happened to your family. That's a lot for a young person to absorb.
It is. And one thing I've learned over the last few years is that my experience isn't exclusive to me. You have a lot of young people who are experiencing traumatic experience throughout their young life or experiencing violence at really young age. And so violence perpetuates violence. I grew up in an environment where you either kill or be killed. All 10 of my older brothers are repeat ex-offenders, and both of my parents are repeat ex-offenders. And so when, for me growing up, I never really recognized that violence was such a huge issue until 2005 when my brother was murdered, which also ironically was the same year that my father was convicted of murder in Virginia. So I recognize then that there are larger issues that are impacting my community that aren't being addressed because neighborhoods like mine aren't making front pages for visitors from outside of Philadelphia to come to. So I think it's really important for us to kind of create some solutions around those problems to kind of eliminate young people from losing their lives.
And this was your brother Andre?
Yes, he was 20 years old at the time.
And killed by someone that he knew?
A friend he had taken into his home, he had clothed, he had provided food to, had robbed him while he was asleep and shot him in the head.
Oh, and after, you know, and I'll get back to you, Kiana, in just one second here, but Jamira, you well, I mean, it's hard to imagine that kind of impact on you.
Yes, it was shocking. I think for me, growing up, I'm one of 16, so I have 10 older brothers. I was very protected and kind of sheltered in many ways. And so when that happened, my view of the world became a lot clearer. And so I remember two of my mentors, my principal, as well as my counselor, coming up to me and saying, well, you can either be one of those people who become very angry or you do something about it. And so that kind of clicked something in my head to say that it doesn't matter where I come from, what neighborhood I'm from, what zip code I represent, that I could have an impact in changing the issues that were affecting people who look like me.
Well, and what's significant is that you had some adults that obviously saw that you were in some kind of crisis.
Yes, and that doesn't happen. You have young people who experience these traumatic incidents and don't receive counseling. They don't have any outlets to talk to people about, and that, in many cases, increase the amount of violence in their neighborhoods or even in their lives.
Kenna, let me go back to you, and I know this is a painful thing for you to talk about, that your dad was murdered last summer in the Strawberry Mansion section and came out to try to break up a fight. One of your brothers was being bullied or being threatened, and he got shot, and you were there.
Yeah. Well, basically, my little brother, he came outside before he went to the party. He was like, hey, sis, like, Kiana, I'm about to go to this party. Do you want to go? I said, well, no. Like, I tried to get him not to go. I said, Mom, why are you? No, Chris, I'm going to be there. He was like, I know, but our cousin's going to be there. So two hours had went past. I see my little brother walking up, and I saw, like, in his face, he was angry and upset about something. So I didn't want to call.
This was a party at a rec center, right?
Yeah, at the park.
Right.
So I didn't want to cause a big scene, so I had pulled him to the side. I'm like, Mama, I know you upset. Just tell me. I'm your sister. And we close. Like, me and my brother, he's my stepbrother. But we have a close bond. Like, we're real close. So I'm like, what's up? I'm like, what's wrong? So he tells me that he got jumped, but they didn't really hurt him. They didn't really do nothing. So I'm like, okay. He's like, don't tell daddy. So I didn't tell my dad. But my cousin, everybody called him Waddy, but his name is Derek. So he goes upstairs and told my dad, Uncle Naeem, they jump mama or this and the third. So we go to the park. Before we even set foot inside there, one guy came over and started hitting on my brother. So my brother, him and my brother started fighting. I guess my brother got the best of him, and his friends wanted to come up. And literally, like, people think that, like, it's unbelievable when I say 75 to 85 people start jumping my little brother right in front of me. Like, I mean, they jumped him so bad. The park is big. They was kicking from one side of the park to the other side of the park.
And you saw this?
Yeah, I was right there. It was me and my family was right there. So my dad started to get upset. He's pacing. We get angry. So after a while, my dad started to pull the guys off of my little brother. And one guy swung on my dad. See, my dad was 30 when he passed away. And the guy had to be like 27, 28. So he swung on my dad. And my dad blacked out. He was so angry inside. My dad swung back. And I guess the cost of my dad swinging back, it hurt the guy. So later on, my mom been on the phone with the cops. So I don't understand why they wasn't there. So later
she was
on that
calling
night,
the cops, obviously, because there were a big fight that was breaking.
So later on that night, I started to hear a little noise like boom, boom. I'm thinking it was firecrackers. So I turns around. I see everybody like, oh my God, they shooting. So I turns around and literally I'm next to my father. I see my dad. He's like, boom, boom. He's getting shot up. So in my head, I'm panicking now. I'm like, oh no. He's going to make it. So my dad sees one of my best friends. Her name is Kabira. He sees her. So he goes to protect her. And then so my dad tried to turn and he tried to run. They did a shot to his head. And when they did the shot to his head, like my dad, he fell. And when he fell to where he fell on me. And like the shot was so bad. It caused like a scission to his head. And like his brains was on the floor. And like, when my dad fell, I fell, and I guess he was letting me know that he was dying. He was like, my dad's last words to me was, let my wife and my kids know that I love them, and I'm going to a better place, and stay strong, and he grabbed my hands, but I didn't want to, like, know that he was really going to be gone from me. So, later on, he saw the guy coming back. I married Jamal, but everyone calls him Stu. He saw him coming back, so he told me to play dead. So I played dead, and we saw him like trying to walk away. He told me to run. Like within 3 seconds, I got shot in my leg. But I did not know until the lady came over and told me. So I'm crawling. I'm trying to crawl for my life. And I crawl, and I see one of my mom, my dad, old friends.
Hold on to that thought. That's Kiana Burns, our guest today on Radio Times, along with Jamira Burley. And we're talking with two young people that live in the city of Philadelphia, some of the challenges, some of the violence that they've had to deal with. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
WHYY is supported by Works for Me, funded by CMS grant CFDA number 93.768. Works for Me offers hiring tips, training, and help finding employees. Details at worksforme-pa.org/employer.
This week on This American Life.
With enough $4 drinks sloshing through our veins, even the most dunderheaded schoolyard japery qualified as coruscating repartee. What do you want? A riposte might begin. A medal or a chest to pin it on? Oh, touche, we cried merrily as we clutched our martinis.
Stories by David Rakoff this week.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
You may know it as a romantic, even seductive dance, but one woman says her Argentinian grandparents have a different take on tango.
You're dancing tango? Oh, it's an old people's dance. And I'm like, no, actually, Grandma, there's a lot of young people now.
We're taking you to the Buenos Aires Tango Festival next time on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Viviana Hurtado.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY. Greensgrow Farm supports WHYY. The Greensgrow Camden Mobile Markets are open Thursdays and Fridays in 8 Camden neighborhood locations. Full details at greensgrow.org/Camden.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. This summer, we've been talking about the problem of guns and violence in Philadelphia, and we've talked with people on the front lines. And today, we are getting perspectives from two young people who have experienced loss firsthand. Jameera Burley's brother was murdered, and many members of her family, as she has told us, have been in and out of jail. She's the new executive director of the City of Philadelphia Youth Commission. Kiana Burns was telling us about what happened to her father last summer. He was murdered, and she was shot and wounded in a fight that broke out in her neighborhood. She's a high school student, and she's involved with a program called Healing Hurt People. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And Ken, I'm sorry I had to interrupt you there. You were describing, obviously, a tremendously frightening and violent situation where your dad was killed. You were there. People were fighting. He lands on top of you, tells you basically to play dead. What happened next?
So, after I had got shot, I was crawling for my life. And I see, thank God, I saw one of my mom and my dad close friends. So I'm crawling, and I had put my hand up on his shoulder. He looked behind him like, who is this? He was like, oh, God, what happened? So as he's carrying me, and I'm in pain because my bone was splattered, so my bone was hanging out. So he takes me to the alleyways, a shortcut to my house. So we go in there, and something told me. I know it's wrong, but something told me, Kiana, just sit right here for a minute. I know I'm bleeding to death, but sit right here for a minute. So I go to sit down and see my dad's brain's already out on the floor. He's already dying. So it's another black car rise up. I'm thinking it's going to be over. Start getting out of the car, shooting up my dad's whole right side. And then more shots to his head. Okay, so I left. I couldn't take it no more, so I left. So I went back to my house and was waiting for the ambulance to come get me. As I'm walking up, I thought my mom knew that my dad and I and also myself got shot, but she didn't. So I'm walking up, bleeding to death, and my mom goes and says, why is Kiana getting carried in his hands? So he sits me on the step. My mom just, she just fainted. She was like, what's going on? Where's my husband? So my younger brother, Lamar, which is my stepbrother, my father, my stepfather, Naeem's child, he was like, well, mom, he started crying. He was snapping because he was so angry. Because growing up, he didn't have his mother figure in his life. So he's letting my mom know that my dad passed. So my mom goes back around to the park. Just get crazy right here. And she sees my dad laying on the floor. So she goes to him like, oh, she's like, oh God, why me, why me? So she's trying to get her little last words in. So my mom hears, I heard this noise, and the guy called her a bee. He's like, B, where you think you going? And he starts shooting at my mom. So my mom started running. She came back to the house. She called my family, letting my family know. So the ambulance came and got me. So I'm in the ambulance now. So I get to the hospital. I'm getting my surgery. And a funny feeling, like I knew my dad was going to die. So the next morning, I get the phone call saying that my dad passed away. And I'm like I started crying because I'm like, why? Like, I didn't know he was going to die this soon. It's so young. But come to find out, if my mom called the ambulance, why the ambulance didn't come get my dad? My dad could have made it. They said he could have made it. But being though the ambulance took so long, my dad, he didn't get carried to the hospital in the ambulance car. My dad got driven to the hospital in the DA's car. So I think that's kind of messed up in my eyes. But basically, it was like, it was so hard. It was hard for me.
I can only imagine. And obviously, the way even you describe it, Kiana, it's almost like a movie, in that it's I can see that you are seeing exactly what happened that terrible day in September of last summer. Jameer, let me turn back to you, and we heard this heartbreaking story, and
yes,
you've had your own struggles as well. But what's so interesting to me about you is that, as you describe, you've got a family that's been in and out of jail, mm-hmm, a brother that was murdered, a father is serving time for murder, mm-hmm, but here you are. How did that happen?
I think it was because I recognized that there was work that needed to be done. When I was in 10th grade, I didn't know that me being 15 years old, that I could do anything about it. But with the kind of encouragement that I got from my mentors and from my peers, they told me that I shouldn't be silent, that I should speak for the ones who are unfortunately silent now because they lost their life, which encouraged me to kind of create the Panther Peace Corps, right, to give young people alternative ways to handle violence without resorting to the use of violence. And so that kind of transformed my whole outlook on how young people could really make impact.
But do you think that your family, in a way, as much as they were involved in, mm-hmm, in criminal activities, that they protected you at the same time?
Yeah, growing up, I was extremely protected. I couldn't even go to the store without my little brother walking me. Like, I always had someone walking me from school into home. So being the only girl for so long, until my little sisters came much later, I was very protected. Mm-hmm. And so I thank my family for that. But I also wish that there was a different outcome, mm-hmm, for the ones who had to experience incarceration as well. Well, as my older brother who was murdered.
You mentioned a school counselor and principal who, mm-hmm, talked to you. What did you want to talk to them about? How was that helpful to you?
I didn't want to talk to them.
Okay, because it's hard to talk about. Yes?
Yeah, I became extremely, extremely angry. I lost my brother literally a few days before Halloween. So I think it was like a Friday. And so I was getting ready to go to school, and we got the phone call, and I went to school in like a trance. No, my cousins and my aunts weren't home, so they weren't aware that I even left to go to school. And so for me, being in school, I became very angry. I started to get in arguments with the teachers, and my principal and my counselor was like, Jameer, you're not normally like this. Like, what,
right,
is wrong? And so
they noticed.
So I finally had a conversation with them, and they were like, you can either be angry, you could accept what happened and not do anything about it, or you can do something. And so I took me a while to really realize that I could do something. And so conversations with other peers and other schoolmates kind of formulated the idea of the Peace Corps model.
So what does your family think about you?
My family is very extremely proud of me. And there are still family members that I wish I could help. But I also have recognized over the years that you can only help people who want to help themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that I have five younger brothers and sisters. I hope that the work that I am currently doing will provide them a different viewpoint on what can happen to a young person who kind of put an initiative into what they want to do in life. And so I'm giving my younger brothers and sisters a different role model than what they're previously used to.
I want to pick up on something. Kiana, let me go back to you. You're involved with this program called Healing Hurt People.
Yes.
Do you have someone that you can talk to?
Well, Rachel and Lee, like, before I met them, after all that happened, after my injuries, I'm not going to lie, I was giving up. I was giving up on my dreams until I met them, and they encouraged me, and they always pushed me, got me to different programs, like with my poetry, my music, my work, school. So let me stay in school, don't give up on life. Mm-hmm. And basically, they just taught me to never give up on your dream, no matter how bad you was hurt, how you feeling, if you feeling down, always just think about your loved ones you lost and what they would want you to do. So I told myself that before my dad passed, he always wanted me to get my diploma and stay in school and achieve my goals. So every time I think of that night, I think of him and think of what he wanted me to become. And I also think of Lee and Rachel because they inspired me to become who, mm-hmm, I am today.
So it's important to have these
yeah,
power, whether they're parents or adults in your life, mm-hmm, in a sense, cheering you on and reminding you
who
you are.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. And that's Kiana Burns. She's a high school student. She's involved with a program called Healing Hurt People. And that's a program affiliated with the Drexel University School of Public Health. She attends One Bright Ray. That's a school here in Philadelphia. Also with us is Jameera Burley. She is the new executive director of the Philadelphia Youth Commission, appointed recently by Mayor Michael Nutter. And she was a student activist and a student leader working to develop alternatives to violence. Both of our guests have lost family members, have had family members murdered, and are dealing with it in their own unique ways. And they're part of a series of conversations we've been having this summer about, frankly, the problems of violence and gun violence here in the city of Philadelphia. Any questions or comments, do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jamira, let me go back to you and just ask you a couple of questions about parents. And I know Michael Nutter has criticized some parents in this city. Police Chief Ramsey said it's not the government's responsibility to raise your child, criticizing some parents for not really doing a good enough job taking care of their children. Some truth there, do you think?
There is some truth, but I also think it's not as cookie cutter as we like to think it is. We're in an entire different era where where we don't have the two parents at home and the white picket fence. You have literally children raising children. So it's kind of hard for a 23-year-old, a 28-year-old trying to raise a 13 and 15-year-old into the man or the woman that they're supposed to be. And I also think the village is no longer there. People don't know their neighbors. You don't have that Mrs. Jackson down the street who kind of snitches on you every time you do something. And so I think we have to rebuild that kind of community effort that used to be there, and also start to provide people mentorship that unfortunately they're not getting in the home. I think without the mentors that I've gained over the last few years, I would not be where I am.
And do you think communities are willing and able to create that, you know, Mrs. So-and-so down the street?
I'm hoping so, but I think a lot of people are scared. Because nowadays, if you break up a fight or if you get into an altercation with somebody, you may very well lose your life. People say that guns don't kill people, that people kill people. Well, back in the day when people used to get into arguments, it just used to be that, an argument. But now somebody is carrying a gun and you may very likely lose your life by just telling someone to get off your step or to stop arguing with that little boy down the street. So I think people are very afraid. And I think that until we start to clean up our streets, we can't expect people to feel neighborly to the people down the block.
Well, in fact, Rihanna, you were saying that you really spend a lot of time indoors. You just feel safer in your house than you do outside.
Yeah, I actually do.
And that's a shame that we're forcing young people to stay behind closed doors because of the violence.
And in your neighborhood, Rihanna.
Kiana.
Excuse me, Kiana. I apologize for that. I should read my own handwriting here. Kiana, thank you for that. Do you know where people can get guns? For instance, how common is it to see people carrying guns in your neighborhood?
Personally myself, ever since the incident, like if I notice that I see a little print behind someone, I would get kind of freaked out because I was shot by one. Right. And basically people think that guns will fix everything, will fix their problems, but it's not. It's really not. It's not going to do nothing but cause you to go to prison for the rest of your life, while the person that you killed is either injured or dead or gone, and you're not going to see your family. So like, basically, I just want to stop all the violence and let younger kids know that it's not all about the violence. Is about becoming who you want to become in life and not giving up on your dream, because you definitely don't want to get a phone call saying that you lost one of your loved ones.
Indeed. Jamira, let me go back to you, and even going back to what you started at Overbrook High School, this idea of figuring out alternatives to violence.
Yes.
And I'm assuming we're talking about talking. Sitting down with someone.
A lot of simple things, too.
About how to resolve disputes.
Yes. Is everything from peer. So one of the components of the Peace Corps motto was peer mediation, having young people talk to their peers about the situations they're experiencing in their lives and providing an outlet. But you also, there's restorative practices. There are taking the zero tolerance out of schools where young people aren't getting expelled or suspended for petty crimes. But also recognizing that we need to start having conversations with young people, because a lot of them just want someone to ask what's wrong with them. Someone just want them to ask how can we help you, and that's not that's not happening.
And I wonder, and this is a terrible generalization about teenagers, mm-hmm. but having been one and having raised one as well, there are times when teenagers, they don't give you that impression that they want that they want someone to talk to them. You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, and I didn't give that impression right. either. There's the tough face.
Exactly.
You want to act like you're tough. You don't want to break down in front of anybody and show them the vulnerability, which is why I think it's really important to have peer mediation, to have young people being able to have those conversations with their friends and their roommates and their classmates to kind of ease them in.
You want to add to that, Kiana?
And basically, that was me.
You know that tough face?
Yeah, that was me. Like, that's me. Like, before I met Lee and Rachel, like, I was the type of girl, the kind of girl just to hold all my feelings and my emotions inside. But sometimes it's not all good because that don't do nothing but make it hard on you, make you really relive that life, relive that moment, that tragedy that you went through. So it's good, like, and I think it's good for the younger kids to have mentors or go to therapy if they go through trauma like this. And every kid want to have somebody they could talk to, they could trust, someone who they know that will be there for them. And I think too many kids out here doesn't have that. They will either have a mom without a father or a father without a mother. And I wish that they could have both. And like she said, nowadays you will see teenagers raising teenagers. Like, I just wish that all this would stop.
Yeah,
because every day I hear something new. Like, either my cousin got shot, my best friend got murdered. It's just too much to handle.
You write poetry, and I have to say that some of my favorite guests on the show have been poets, only because they have the ability, usually within a small amount of words, to say really powerful things. Have you found that to be helpful for yourself?
Yeah.
To use poems?
Yeah, because it helps. It helps me, like, I don't only write poetry just to write it. I write it, like, to express how I'm feeling at the moment. Sometimes I feel down. Sometimes I feel a little blue. Sometimes I feel happy.
Yeah.
So I just write my poetry and, like...
And was it your grandmom who encouraged you to do that?
Yeah. My grandmother actually encouraged me to do that. Like,
yeah.
She's always, like, before I go to sleep, she was like, you want to hear a poem or a poetry? I would be like, sometimes, like, how? What is that? Because I was so young. But when she read it to me, I'm like, oh, like, I grew up doing this. So, mm-hmm. like I said, I'm living my grandmother's legend. And she's, like, she passed away on August 11th, Saturday. And her funeral service was actually on Friday. And my cousin, I mean, my dad's sister, my aunt, she sung this song called Open Up Your Heart by Yolanda Adams. And my mom loves that song. My mom loves it. And, like, when I walked past the view of my grandmother's body, like, all my family was scared to give my grandmother a kiss. Like, I kissed my grandmother twice on her lips because I'm like, why be scared?
Mm-hmm. Well, lucky grandma. That's Kiana Burns, and also with us, Jamira Burley. And we are talking about their lives and some of their efforts to address the problem of youth violence in the city of Philadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
The WHYY Connections Festival rocks the Great Plaza at Penn's Landing. Yola Tango. Frank Turner.
After all, it was rock and roll.
Maps and Atlases.
And the moon stood stock still.
The Lawsuits.
I can't wait to get down to Tennessee.
Baby and Achilles. And more. Saturday, September 8th. More at WHYY.org/Connections Festival.
Bill Hader is nominated for an Emmy for his work on Saturday Night Live. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with him about his characters, including Stefan, the gay nightlife correspondent. Hader's co-writer often adds lines in his cue cards at the last minute just to make him laugh on air.
When I walk into work, the cue card guys are like, hey, we just read the Stefan. Oh, boy. You know what I mean?
Join us this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Have big food, corporations like Coca-Cola and Kellogg, corrupted the health food market? A watchdog group says the USDA certified organic label is a fraud. Also, how the Greek yogurt boom is boosting the economy here in the U.S. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with Kiana Burns. She participates in a program called Healing Hurt Program affiliated with Drexel University School of Public Health. She attends One Bright Ray in an alternative school here in Philadelphia. Jamira Burley was recently appointed Executive Director of the Philadelphia Youth Commission by Mayor Michael Nutter. And both of them joining us today on Radio Times giving us their perspective of what it's like to grow up in this city and some of the problems of violence and gun violence in Philadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Lauren from Wilmington to join us. And Lauren, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Hi there. Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, indeed. Go ahead, Lauren.
Okay. I would like to first comment on the older the two women, you are, it's awesome. You should keep it up. You're the one that's going to turn it around. And the second girl, amazing. Keep it up. My comment that I would like to make is that somebody had made a comment that, you know, I wish our neighborhoods would clean up in the community and help each other, support one another. But in my opinion, it is imperative, absolutely imperative for a mother and a father to raise their children and to be their role model. You women needed to have somebody, and thank the Lord you found somebody, but those role models need to be your parents. And because you don't have that, you're doing what you need to do to make it right. But the young gal, I'm forgetting your name, but you had said it, I wish that, you know, people would have a mother and a father. And in my opinion, this world and all of what we do in it to make it better isn't going to change until the mother and the father raise their children.
Well, Lauren,
yes.
No, I appreciate the call. Let me give first Jamira Burley a chance to weigh in on that. Do you agree?
I do agree to an extent. I know my life would be definitely different if I had both of my parents there 24/7. And I think that now a lot of young people are just doing what they can with what they have. Unfortunately, they don't have that privilege to have both parents. And so I think we have to provide opportunities for people who don't have that in their lifetime, in their life, by mm-hmm. providing mentors and providing peers who can help them kind of navigate through life and become more successful.
Because I think you're almost a perfect example of that.
Yes.
Of someone who had some struggles in life and mm-hmm. didn't have that mother-father family.
Yes, and I think what has happened to me over the last few years is a clear example of why people need to give their time to the people in their neighborhood and to the young people in their lives to kind of mentor and provide advice.
What do you think, Kiana?
Well, I'm kind of agreeing to Jamira.
Yes.
To Jamira, because nowadays, like, when children don't have a mother figure and a father figure in their life, they tend to give up on hope and what they want to become in life because, like she said, they do what they think they should do. I think that's why most kids out here go out and sell drugs, rob people, kill one another. And, like, what I say to myself is, I don't want to become nothing like that. I want to be me. And most kids out here just try to join a crowd, you know, because they think they have to. But in reality, they don't. They just need someone to talk to and someone to be there for them. And if I could do it, I would be there for each and every one they need to shoulder.
Thank you for calling into Radio Times, Lauren. I mean, that goes back also, Jamira, to this whole peer pressure issue, and that's, I mean, in certain ways, that is growing up, mm-hmm. is figuring out how to deal with peer pressure. But it seems certainly in some of these more at-risk neighborhoods, that peer pressure could be a dangerous thing.
And is intensified because you have young people who don't have mother and father, and so they look for that affection wherever they can, and a lot of times they find it in gangs or community organized gangs, and so that peer pressure is only intensified mm-hmm. because now that affection you wanted, you're getting from the people in your neighborhood, and might might not be the most positive. So I think we need to teach young people how to, one, love themselves and be able to say no if it's if something that can possibly harm who they are.
I don't mean to have you represent all young people in Philadelphia, but Jamira, looking at how young people look at the police department, for instance, cops on the street, how do you see that relationship, if there is one?
So I have, I guess I can say I have a unique experience because before I was hired by the mayor as the youth commissioner, I was actually, for the executive director, I was a part of the Philadelphia Police Advisory Commission. And so there is a lot of anger between young people and the police. They don't feel like there is a communication that is going on. But I have seen inroads over the last few years where police are actually making effort to go into the communities, meet their neighbors, and to have conversations with young people. But I think there is still much more work to be done where young people can actually feel comfortable enough to go to the police, and police aren't brutalizing neighborhoods and making victims out of already people who are already victims.
Let me get to another caller. We have, looks like Robert from Mount Airy joining us on Radio Times. And Robert, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, Marty. I want to ask a couple questions to the young ladies there. Maybe they know, maybe not. How big is the drug trade as well as drug gangs? How big influence do they have in the city of Philadelphia and certain neighborhoods? And also, question two, Marty, maybe someone else out there who's listening to the program can answer. What's wrong with Philadelphia judges where they let repeat offenders, like the two, like the people who killed Miss Kiana's father as well as my nephew, why are they back out on the street after having so many violent offenses committed?
It's a fair question, Robert, and it's one that we can't answer in this show, and we've discussed it from time to time in other shows, but we will keep that in mind for future shows on this issue. But let me take your first question, actually, and put it to Kiana. He wanted to know about the drug trade, drug gangs. Do you see that in your neighborhood?
Yeah, actually, though, I see it every day. Every day, every time I walk outside, I actually see it. You will see drug dealers out on the street selling people cocaine, weed, heroin, different type of drugs. And like I said, I grew up without my father because he thought it would be better to do that than to man up to his responsibility taking care of his two children. I have a older brother, blood brother, by the name of Robert Burns. And my brother, like, he just need my father in his life. He just really need him because, like, I see my brother going down that road, and I want him to make a U-turn and come back to reality and man up to his responsibility because he have a daughter.
Does he live in Philadelphia?
Yeah, he live in Philadelphia. He live in Philadelphia. He's trying to change. So I'm proud of him. I just want him to know that I'm proud of him.
Fair enough. Robert, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And Jamir, let me ask you about what has often been described as this kind of no snitching culture. I don't know if you like that word or not. I'm not sure if I like that word or not. But nonetheless, you hear frustration from members of the government, from police, that when something happens, and both of you have experienced, you know, terrible tragedies, the people don't come forward. I know there's not an easy explanation for that, but how do you understand
there that? Isn't an easy explanation for that, but I would say it's twofold. You have the police department, you have city officials who want neighborhoods to kind of start speaking out about the violence that is happening and who committing those violent acts. But you also have the side of the community members who are like, if I was to snitch on the person who just shot someone down the street, maybe they'll come after my family next, especially if they're not put behind bars fast enough. Or like the gentleman said earlier, they're let back out after they repeat an offense. So I think there's two folds. If we can't protect the community, we can't expect the community to provide information to make their neighborhood safe. But I also think the police perspective or many a city officials' perspective is that we can't make your neighborhood safe if you don't start to speak up, because that same person who shot someone 2 days ago may very well shoot someone in your family 2 months from now. So I think it's a twofold and kind of trying to balance the two.
Kiana, did they find the person who murdered your father?
Yeah, they actually found Amir Jamal, and they recently found Sharif, but he's not in jail for my dad's charge. He's in jail because he murdered someone else later that month. But about to say.
They found the guy that, or they the person who killed your dad, they identified him?
Yeah, and it's a comment that Jamira said that I want to add on to it.
Sure.
Most children or adults out here, they feel as though that they don't want to snitch because the killer will come after you. They will, and come to find out, so it got me angry, but she didn't really know. She just found out. But you know, back when I was telling you a story about how my dad died, and he died saving my best friend's life. So come to find out, that was her people. The person who killed my father, Amir Jamal, that was her cousin. And the court, our trial is coming up soon. And they want her to be, you know, they want her to be,
yeah, testify.
Yeah, they want her to come up there and testify. But she's kind of afraid because she's getting calls and he's telling her that he's going to kill her if she go up there and speak. But what I'm saying to her is, why be scared? Because you testify, he's going to keep him in jail. He's not coming out because not only did he murdered my dad and he shot me. Come to find out, he shot two of my little cousins the same night in their face. Two bullets apiece in their face. One of my little cousins got the bullets out of her face, but one of them, she still have them for the rest of her life because they said that it was so far up near her eye, if they go out and try to pull it out, she was going to die. She was going to lose her life. So, like, I don't really want to speak on it neither. But I just want to keep him in jail. I want to keep him in there so we have one less a killer out in the streets. Mm-hmm. And I think that it would be better if we would speak up. If we knew something, let them know. Let the cops know that you saw something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you also describe it. It's complicated, as you said, yeah. Jamira, because you know people or you might be related mm-hmm. people, and
yeah.
and that of course makes it even more complicated. I do want to get back to our callers, but let me go back to you, Jamira, because we were talking before we went on the air about things that are happening in Philadelphia. I mean,
yes.
We've been spending most of the hour talking not just about your lives, but also some of the challenges that young people in this city face. But there are programs. Both of you are involved in programs. Mm-hmm. There are things that are going on that can help young people. Can you talk about that?
Yes. There is an abundance of programs and initiatives that are happening around the city to kind of combat this issue around violence, but also to provide young people safe havens to be at during times of violent crimes. So you can actually go to the city's website at www.phila.gov/youthprograms, and you can find an abundance of what's going on around the city in regards to young people. But I also want to point out the fact that there is a lot of organizations who are taking the initiative to recognize that we have to start talking about violence. Last month, the Youth Commission actually partnered with the Nehemiah Foundation to put together the Peace in Philly rally that happened at Love Park, and where we brought a few hundred people around the city, which was to start a conversation around, one, that violence is happening, and two, that young people need to step mm-hmm. up to the plate and kind of solve the problems that are facing people that look like them. So there are a ton of other issues that are happening, I mean, initiatives that are happening like that. The Youth Commission is actually partnering with the League of Young Voters next month to put on the Ignite Philadelphia, the bullet or the ballot, to kind of highlight that all of these issues play into who you elect as judges, who you elect as mayors, who you elect as city council members, and how to really be educated on the issue. So if you're looking for more information about that, you can go to the Youth Commission website, which is philly.gov/youthcommission, or you can contact us at 215-686-2159. And if there's a particular program that you want to be connected to, we can actually connect you to that program.
Kenna, what would you like to do when you grow up? Not that you're not a grown-up now, but when you're an adult, you're through high school, maybe through college, what do you want to do?
Well, I want to work on my music and my poetry. But sitting here today, Jamira, she kind of inspired me to help make the world a better place. So, yeah.
You have a lot to offer. You should know that. You have a lot. Both of you have a lot to offer. Let me get to, it looks like Ron from Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. And Ron, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to just mention something. I appreciate hearing about the different things that the school is doing at the One Teen, all the different arts, how that's factored in. I work at a private school where we actually, we teach our students peer mediation and conflict resolution. And along with that, not only teaching them that, but we also do something else. I wanted to see how your your panelists respond to this, which is we also partner with one other organization and a local K-8 school where they go to the other school and they actually teach these conflict mediation skills to the younger students. So one other piece there is that I'm wondering if about older students teaching younger students. And my question is, I work at Philadelphia Mennonite. What have you seen any other type of programs where teens in high school are mentoring kids, younger kids, to kind of help them work through some of the anger issues? Because a lot of this stuff is starting when they're young.
Well, Ron,
and that was my question.
Yeah, it's a good question, and you called the right place because I'm sure Jamira Burley can respond. We have about 45 seconds, Jamira.
Yes, I have seen it happen. For the last 5 years, actually, the school district has been training high school students at public schools across the city around peer mediation and conflict resolution. So it is happening. There needs to be increase in that, but as we all know, money make things happen, and the funding for that program actually was eliminated. But I will say that I do know of programs that are mentoring high school students who are mentoring middle school and elementary. I don't think enough of it is happening. So if you want, you can contact us, and we can talk about ways to increase that in the city.
And what are your plans for the future, Jamira?
I want to go to law school. I want to work around policy because I don't think there's enough people advocating for more policy change around violence prevention and intervention. So that's what I want to do. But my biggest goal is to make the Youth Commission that much more solidified in the city and to be a voice for the people who can or won't speak for themselves.
Well, it's been a great pleasure and frankly a great honor to have both of you with us on Radio Times. You have important things to teach us. Jamira Burley, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And she is the Executive Director of the Philadelphia Youth Commission. And Kiana Burns, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She's participates in the Healing Hurt program, and she's a student at One Bright Ray. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out more about this program. In fact, if you go to our Facebook page, you can see what our guests look like. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, but stay with us. We'll be right back.